What's up, everyone? It's Michael Scotto, HoopsHype.com's NBA writer and host of the Hoops Hype podcast. On today's episode, our Hoops Hype salary cap expert Yossi Goslin and I will break down potential Damian Lillard trade scenarios. We'll touch a little bit on Ben Simmons, what's the financial future for the Suns, and some coaching updates around the league, and a little bit more. But first, I wanted to turn it over to Yossi, who recently wrote on HoopsHype.com a couple of trade scenarios for Damian Lillard in case he does become available. And he recently saw the report by Chris Haynes at Yahoo that regarding Damian Lillard, that potentially could have some concerns about their ability to field a championship contender. And so with that in mind, you know, Yossi, I wanted to turn it over to you because two teams in particular you brought up as potential trade partners I thought were interesting were the Golden State Warriors and the Philadelphia 76ers.
Yeah, so with Damian Lillard, I always felt that if there was going to be some kind of trade request or what just happened, some kind of hint of unhappiness, I always felt it would probably come from Chris Haynes. And I had this whole, I thought out a bunch of scenarios like a month ago. So I've been ready for this, just waiting for some kind of catalyst. But I put out a lot of different scenarios, but the two that I really fall back on in the scenario that Lillard is going to get traded this offseason, if that happens, I feel most strongly about the Warriors and Sixers. With the Sixers, you've obviously got Ben Simmons, and there's already a lot of uncertainty about his future there. And that is a very huge asset that the Blazers can get back in return. I think that the Sixers will probably have to throw in some more stuff. I think so they could throw in up to an additional 3 first round picks. They can put in some pick swaps in between. You can also throw in some young players like Tyrese Maxey or Matisse Thybulle. I'm not saying they should offer all of that. I'm just saying that these are the most valuable assets they have. And I imagine that if Damian Lillard were to become available, was going to be traded this offseason, that is one of the more appealing packages. The other one that is with the Warriors. The Warriors, they ended up getting the Minnesota pick. It's conveying this year. It'll fall in number 7. They've got the 14 pick. They have Andrew Wiggins as trade filler. I imagine that they want to pair Lillard with Curry, Clay, and Draymond. I get into a little bit of how great that offense would be. And they can also offer James Wiseman, depending how Portland feels about him. That could be a very intriguing asset to get back. And one other aspect of the Warriors offer that I don't think has really been thought about so far is that the Warriors can also offer future picks way out. So once the new league year rolls in, they could offer their 2028 pick. They could offer their 2026 pick conditionally because it's tied up in a protection to a pick they owe Memphis right now, but it'll probably convey in 2024. So they can offer conditionally a 2026 pick. And I think that's also super valuable if you're Portland getting those picks back, because if Golden State is getting Lillard, you know, he's 31. Curry's also in his early 30s. Clay and Draymond, I believe, also recently just turned 30 or 31. So realistically, that team has like a 4 to 5 year window of contention, in my opinion, which means that those picks way out can be very valuable. So that's just another added bonus to doing a deal with the Warriors. But yeah, those are the main two I would definitely keep an eye on. I think that there's definitely arguments to trading Lillard now, just mainly because his Supermax extension is about to kick in. He's got 4 years left on his deal. That alone, combined with his most recent All-NBA season, puts his trade value at its ultimate peak. Like, I don't think I'm not sure they're going to get more for Dame in the future. I think this is really the time to strike the hottest.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's interesting with Dame because he's a guy that, even though he is 31, he's in the prime of his career still, and he's continued to elevate in the playoffs and be a superstar. He's done everything he can in Portland. Not sure ultimately if he ends up getting moved or not. And, you know, you talk about some of those later picks, 2026, 2028. A lot of times GMs in the league are a little bit reluctant to trade that far out in advance because they don't know if they're going to be there ultimately to see those picks through or use them in a future trade. And so, you know, it's funny.
It won't be their problem then.
Yeah. And then, you know, when you were talking about right beforehand saying, you know, you were kind of waiting on this for like a month, I could tell you right now, a ton of executives around the league have been waiting on pins and needles for that type of report that we heard about Lillard. But, you know, you also touched on Ben Simmons with the Philadelphia 76ers and his uncertain future. He's going to work this summer on his shooting and his personal development. But, you know, with that in mind, when you talk about Ben Simmons, what's interesting is the Timberwolves are a team that's in the mix for Ben Simmons, and they've wanted to upgrade at the power forward position dating back to the trade deadline last year when they were in the mix for Aaron Gordon. And that's a position of need for them. And so, you know, Simmons and D'Angelo Russell played together at Montford Academy where they won back-to-back championships. So, you know, that's something that, I mean, if they ended up playing together again, I think that would be an interesting pairing. Also, you know, it comes down to the fit for Ben Simmons, because if you put him at the four, then he can play more of the Lamar Odom type of role. You know, I touched upon this with you in a previous podcast. You know, I know he got compared to Magic Johnson, LeBron James a little bit, but I also see a bit of Lamar Odom in his game if he ended up playing more of the power forward position and was kind of more of a point forward guy.
I'm glad you brought up Minnesota, because I'm thinking about all the different Ben Simmons scenarios as well. And if moved, I really believe that Minnesota might be the best fit out there for him. And, you know, I'm not saying that if they get Simmons that they're going to just – I don't know how far they're going to go, but I think it'll be a very significant upgrade. Might just send them straight to the playoffs. I've seen a lot of people throw out like, okay, maybe Minnesota can offer something like D'Angelo Russell and Malik Beasley. That would be something maybe Philadelphia could be interested in, but I don't really think that's something Minnesota wants to do if they're targeting Ben Simmons. I think the challenge for Minnesota is that Philadelphia, they ideally, if they trade Simmons, they want to get an all-star back. This is something we discussed in our last podcast, that if they're trading Simmons, they need like another ball dominant guard. So, you know, if they could get Damian Lillard, that'd be awesome. If they can get another type of all-star like Bradley Beal potentially, or you know, just there might be someone else that becomes available, not a superstar like Dame, but I think that's what they want to get first and foremost, an all-star. And Minnesota doesn't have that, which leads me to that Minnesota can be the ideal third team in that type of trade, where Philadelphia gets an all-star of some sort, and Philadelphia would send Simmons to Minnesota, and then both Minnesota and Philadelphia can send a bunch of picks, young players, stuff to the team trading the said all-star. So what I was saying is, you know, they can trade potentially Russell or Beasley or Edward. I don't think Minnesota really wants to trade any of those guys. I think what Minnesota might try to do is, as a third team, try to package like Ricky Rubio, Jerry Culver, just, you know, get salary filler out there. And then the main asset to send back, you can send out Jaden McDaniels, the draft rights to Leandro Bolmaro. He might be coming in this year, and just multiple picks. And, you know, with Minnesota, those could very well be valuable picks. You never know how good they're going to be. They haven't been very good in the past 15 years. So those can be valuable picks. Look, it's not an amazing offer. But that's why I'm saying that as a third team, if they're the ones getting Simmons, Philadelphia is getting an all-star, and whoever's trading that all-star is going to a rebuild mode, getting a bunch of stuff. That I think is their best pathway to getting Simmons while keeping everybody on their core. Because if they're pairing Simmons with Russell and Towns, and they also still have Beasley and Edwards, I think that might be a playoff team. And the good thing about Simmons is that he's going to work on his offense. He's going to work on getting his shot back. But even if he doesn't improve his offense, even if he doesn't get a reliable shot, he's still huge for Minnesota. He still improves them just for the defense that he brings, which they're one of the worst teams in defense. But if they can, even if Simmons is just going to be the same exact guy he is, that's still a huge plus for Minnesota.
You hit the nail on the head in terms of his defensive ability. And, you know, when you talked about some of those guys on Minnesota, whether it's as a potential third team in a Simmons trade or anything in general, you know, D'Angelo Russell hasn't had a chance to be healthy with Karl Anthony Towns, which has been a bit underwhelming for Minnesota. Malik Beasley, they like tremendously. You know, even when he was going through his legal stuff, they fully supported him and they gave him a nice deal considering. You know, I had wrote on HoopsHype how they courted him in free agency and kind of went all out for him. Anthony Edwards, obviously their number one pick, they're fond of. They like Jaden McDaniels a lot, but to your point, if you're getting a guy like Ben Simmons, you certainly look to move a guy like that. Jarrett Culver is another guy that many expect will be available this summer on the trade market leading up to the draft and through the rest of the summer as well. You know, you touched on those teams, and I mean, for Minnesota being a lottery team, trying to get out of, you know, just continuously, I can't even say continuously because they just went with Tom Thibodeau a couple of years out of the playoffs, but predominantly they've been a lottery team. So they are going to look to make some moves and shake things up, especially with new ownership on hand. But speaking of lottery teams, I did want to touch on some coaching updates and from some sources I've heard around the league, starting with the Washington Wizards. I've heard the Wizards are continuing their first round of interviews this week, and it could progress to the next stage of interviews by the end of the week. So stay tuned on that. You know, with that in mind, another team out there, a lottery team that has been looking to fill their head coaching vacancy, you've got the New Orleans Pelicans. And recently, you know, Jack Vaughn, depending on who you talk to around the league, many believe that he was a strong candidate, if not the favorite, to land that job in New Orleans for several factors. One, his relationship with Trajan Langdon, but ultimately he ended up, you know, pulling out, as Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN had reported. You know, he does want to spend some time with his sons and wants to remain in Brooklyn. With that said, I mean, for Jack Vaughn, you know, multiple teams were in talks with him to be a head coach again, including New Orleans, where he was pretty far along. And so, you know, from a source I've spoken to, he wants to be a head coach again. If next year presents the right opportunity, he'll take it. And, you know, his family will be on board with that. You know, what's interesting there is, you know, for New Orleans now, do you pivot to a guy like Kenny Atkinson, a guy that's helped change a culture in Brooklyn and has ties to Trajan Langdon? Just that's more my own opinion and question there for them. And I also touched on, I just want to go back to the Wizards for a second, but I'd heard that Ronald Norred, who some will remember from Butler, is currently a Charlotte Hornets assistant. Heard Ronald Norred was in the mix for the Washington Wizards job and interviewed there as part of that first round of interviews. Another coach I had heard, Chris Quinn, Miami Heat assistant coach, I heard was also in the mix there in Washington with their first round of interviews, I was told. So, you know, interesting to see Washington look at some guys who would be potential first-year coaches and guys that have some playing experience as well. Maybe a little bit of a deviation from where some people around the league thought maybe they would go with a backcourt core of Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal. Certainly time, you know, plenty of time in their search, and there's other candidates, but thought it was noteworthy. And, you know, for a guy like Ronald Norred, I've heard, you know, from some coaches around the league that there's a rumbling that he could end up in Indiana as part of Rick Carlisle's staff. So something to potentially look out for there as well.
Yeah, I can't. I feel like with New Orleans and Washington's head coaching search, there's got to be a lot of pressure on them. Washington with Beals, he's got 1 year left before his player option. And New Orleans with some of the recent reporting with Zion, I can't really even imagine like who the right guy is, because out of all the different like coaching hires we have so far, I feel like those two teams really have to nail the right guy, just as far, not just for like basketball reasons, but as well as like culture setting.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see which way these teams go at this point, especially when you've got some veterans on the roster like Washington has that are in their prime. And so it'll be interesting to see. But, you know, with that said, you talked about teams having like a little bit of pressure maybe on coaching. We saw in Portland when Chauncey Billups was announced as the coach and did their press conference, that the PR staff cut off Jason Quick, who covers the team for The Athletic, his follow-up question of Billups about what he learned from the 1997 incident that he was part of. And it looked like Chauncey was ready to answer the question in some form, whether he was going to answer it thoroughly or even provide a non-answer. I was just surprised that the question was cut off completely. And then Sean Hyken from Bleacher Report asked Neil O'Shea, the Blazers executive, for more details about the investigation into Billups. And, you know, Sean tweeted that O'Shea's quote was, quote, "That's proprietary, Sean. You're just going to have to take our word that we hired an experienced firm that led us to the results we already discussed," end quote. Not necessarily the best look, I would say, if you're going to make a hire like that. Chauncey's an older guy. He's in his mid-40s. He could speak for himself. I was a little surprised that wasn't allowed to happen, because if anything, you know you're getting that question and you should be prepared for that.
Yeah, just an embarrassing execution, embarrassing lead up to the hiring, with a lot of backlash coming from it. I don't know why they cut him off. He was, I was genuinely interested in hearing Chauncey answer that. So,
and I mean, here's the thing with Chauncey. I'll say this from a basketball perspective: the guy is a winner, and he's got a high IQ. He's been well respected. You know, depending on who you talk to around the league, he was Neil O'Shea's guy from the start, dating back to their time with the Clippers and the relationship that they formed there. So it'll be interesting to see if Chauncey can maximize the backcourt of Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, or if they end up making a move. But, you know, it's on Chauncey Billups now to take this team where Terry Stotts could not, and to see if he can get them over the hump. I don't know if strictly a coaching change is going to do that. I think they have more work to do, and with that roster, and time will tell. You know, they've got Norman Powell's free agency coming up. That's going to be an interesting topic. He is one of the top ranked free agents on our Hoops Hype free agent rankings. You could keep an eye out for that. That came out recently as well, but we'll see what happens there. But while Portland is trying to get over the hump, there are two teams in the West right now that are battling out, that are on the cusp of battling for the NBA Finals appearance, and it's the Phoenix Suns and the Los Angeles Clippers. And with that in mind, Yossi, I wanted to get your expertise on this. With DeAndre Ayton, he's a guy that for Phoenix could be eligible for a maximum contract extension given the way that he has played in the playoffs. He certainly improved his stock. So with that in mind, can you kind of lay out for the listeners what potentially a max extension for DeAndre Ayton would look like?
And so the Phoenix Suns, they're about to have a very expensive roster, not next season, but the following, thanks to their success. So The first thing to look at would be DeAndre Ayton, who he's going to be extension eligible. So will Mikal Bridges, but I think DeAndre Ayton will be the more pressing matter. Before the playoffs, I'm not too sure what Aiden's value was. I was thinking maybe he could get somewhere between 20 to 25 mil annually. I don't know. That was just something I was kind of thinking. And had the Lakers eliminated them in the first round, had Davis not gotten hurt, maybe that's what we might be saying. Maybe we'd be talking about that range. But now the Suns are one game away from the finals. He's been in the discussion for a max extension now. So it'd be roughly $168 million over 5 years, which would average out to $33 million a year. Even if you don't have to agree if he's the max player or not, but just based on the circumstances and the success the Suns are having, just everything he's doing. The thing I like about DeAndre Ayton is that he's not like the best center in the league by any means, but he does exactly what he needs to do. He knows exactly where he needs to be at the right time. He doesn't try to do much more than needed. And it's just, he's been so important for the Suns and their success. And that it's really just really like usually young centers that enter their first playoffs, a lot of the times they fold, they don't show up. And Ayton, he just in the playoffs, he really elevated. He became a totally different guy. I didn't think he would show this in his first playoffs. I'm really impressed. So the market's definitely gonna, I think the market has is showing that he is going to be a max player. And $33 million a year, annually, that's gonna, if the Suns win the championship, I don't think you're really gonna have much of a choice. You win the championship, you don't really think twice. He go to the finals, Bam Adebayo got a max contract. I think that's what you're gonna have to look at in negotiations.
It's interesting. Ayton, he's a guy that's talented enough where he can certainly do more and have a bigger role, but he's starting his role at that. And, winning in this league always drives up the market for the players on that team. And ironically, you're going to see that with Chris Paul as well. This is a guy that I think coming into this year, not a lot of people would have thought he would even really consider opting out of a $44 million player option. But here we are. He's kind of played himself into a position where the Suns have to pay him and take care of him as well. I mean, Devin Booker wanted help, and he's talked publicly about how much he's learned about being a pro from Chris Paul, from his daily preparation. Both guys are represented by CAA, so you got those ties as well. And Chris Paul, in carrying the Suns to these new heights, like I said, he's put himself in a position to secure his financial future for a few more seasons. Maybe he doesn't necessarily get the $44 million each year, but put himself in a position where he can still net a lot of high guaranteed money coming up in the next year or even two after that. Yossi, for the listeners, can you kind of give a little bit of breakdown of what his contract options look like this summer if he ends up either opting in or opting out?
So Chris Paul's got a very interesting decision to make because he's got a $44 million player option. And the best, absolute best case scenario for him would be that he opts in to that and then also gets a maximum extension, which would be for 2 years, $96 million. Now, that would give him $46 million to $50 million over the next 2 years. If I'm Chris Paul, I would love to sign that. It's an additional $96 million, but I'm not too sure that the Suns would want to necessarily give that much to him. But obviously, they do want to extend him. So there has, Eric Pincus reported that Chris Paul could potentially opt out and then re-sign for 3 years, $100 million. So the idea of him opting out, taking a little less upfront and securing more long-term money, that's also like, if I wasn't even sure Chris Paul would get an additional $100 million last year, definitely not 2 years ago, but here we are and he's in a great position to lock in more money. So let's say he does opt out and sign 3 years, $100 million. Well, then he's basically locking in an additional $56 million. So if you're Chris Paul, if that's on the table, you can either do that, do the safe move, lock in $56 million or so, or opt in and hopefully get another max extension where you get close to double that, but there's no guarantees you'll get that much. Maybe, you know, and then if you have a bad season, maybe you get even less.
You know, it's interesting too. Chris, for those who have not seen it yet, Chris Paul's the number two overall free agent on our Hoops Hype free agent ranking. So he certainly got a lot of good options for himself coming up this summer. Another guy that could be extension eligible is Mikal Bridges, who's had a great year for Phoenix, really has continued to develop. You know, I got to say one thing, those Jay Wright Villanova guys, him, Pascal, Dante DiVincenzo, et cetera, they've always found a way to, most of them, I should say, have found a way to carve out a nice niche in the NBA. And we've seen it with Mikal Bridges with Phoenix so far.
Yeah, Mikal Bridges, again, another extension eligible guy. He is probably also going to get just a very big extension. I think the best comp right now to look at, both as a player and money-wise, would be OG Anunoby. He signed an extension where he's going to be, I think he's going to be earning maybe like $18 million annually. I think that's a good comp to look at, but I think Bridges should get a little more than that just because, you know, you're probably, you'll mainly because of the Sun's success. So, you know, I think like a pretty safe annual range just to start could be around 20 mil. And so and when you look at that, if he's your fourth highest paid player making around 20 mil, stuff's really going to be adding up for the next few years. They'll be fine next season, but then it's going to start to get really expensive in the 22-23 season. One other player we just like quick projection. Let's say DeAndre Ayton gets his max and Chris Paul opts out, does around $100 million. So maybe he's making like $30-33 million. And then you've got Bridges making $20 million. So 2 years from now, if that's all happening, the Suns are looking at being close to 20 mil over the tax with just 10 players. And this is before talking about Cameron Payne, who's another guy who's got a contract coming up. He's going to have early bird rights, so they can give him about 4 years for up to 47 million. That's the projection for now. So that would start him at around 10 to 10 and a half mil. So that'd be another guy right there. You have four guys, you're the four main guys making 20 to 30 mil. And then potentially Crowder and Cameron Payne making around 10 mil. And then you also have Dario Saric making just a shy of 10 million. If the Suns win the title, that's, you know, that's the best thing that could ever happen. But, you know, at the same time, they're going to have a very expensive team going forward. And the West is going to get healthier 2 years from now. It's going to get a lot tougher.
It's just funny hearing you like kind of sigh about it. It's almost like you were Robert Sarver getting ready to fit the luxury tax bill.
Listen, if the Suns win the title, I don't think any owner should sigh about it, but if I'm being a little realistic, I don't know how the Suns will still be contenders. They'll still be a really good team going forward, but this is a really expensive team, and it's hard to see them going back to the finals consistently. I'm sure they'll make it back maybe once or twice, but they're gonna have to pay a lot of money for a team that, and to compete in a very brutal West. And maybe I'm a little more skeptical of how committed ownership might be to be paying this much going forward. But no, we'll see. Like, I don't have any doubts that if they win the title, like, even if they don't win the title, but at this point, I feel strong that they will. They'll extend everyone as appropriately and you know, just go from there.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's interesting. You talked about all these guys that got to pay. There's two guards in this series that have done really well and have boosted their free agency value. One on the Suns, Cameron Payne, and one on the Clippers, Reggie Jackson. I'll let you take the floor as far as what they can get, at least from their current teams, heading into the summer.
So yeah, so they both have the same situation. Both of them, they have early bird rights. They can get roughly, it looks like, a $46-47 million over 4 years, start between 10 to 10 and a half mil starting salary. To get this much from their respective teams, it would have to be at least a 2-year deal with no options. So with campaign, I don't know if he would get the full max, mainly of the early bird maximum. Just maybe he could get somewhere closer to like 8, you know, maybe slightly under, just because he is coming off the bench. Reggie, on the other hand, he's been just on fire. Like, I've always been the fan of Reggie with his potential in OKC, and when he got traded to Detroit, I was really excited to see what he could do. And he did really well, in my opinion. Just, you know, Detroit didn't really accomplish that much. And when he got bought out and signed with the Clippers, this was really his first opportunity to play with since OKC, I guess, but as a starter for a really good team. And, you know, the Clippers had their issues last offseason. Their postseason ended early, and he signs for the minimum this year. And I honestly kind of just didn't necessarily write him off, but I did not really expect Reggie to be more than a backup, and he's unbelievable.
He's dunking on people.
Oh yeah. Like, he had two ridiculous dunks yesterday. And so with Reggie, I think he's definitely more realistic to get that full early bird maximum. And my feeling is that, you know, when a guy like Reggie has a really good playoffs like this, there's probably going to be a strong market for him elsewhere. And another team could outbid the Clippers because they can't offer him more than that 10 million starting range. So a team with cap space could outbid that if they want to. But I feel like in the end, both sides will agree to something. The Clippers, they've got the most money out of any team, so I don't think they're worried about spending too much and what their luxury tax bill will be like. If this is the Reggie Jackson that's going to be playing like this in the playoffs, I think they'll happily pay him that much. And it's just that what Reggie's such a good fit for what the Clippers are doing offensively. It's, if you're another team, there's no guarantee that with your system that Reggie's going to be this good, which leads me to feel that, and I'm not to say that Reggie can't succeed on another team, but I think, like, with what the Clippers are doing, this was a really great situation for him. And my feeling is that both sides would want to continue this.
Yeah, and time will tell. I think certainly Reggie Jackson and Cameron Payne have both helped themselves. You would not have seen either one of these scenarios for either guy probably coming into the year, even midway through the year around the trade deadline. But, you know, the playoffs, I think the slogan is where amazing happens. It's where cha-ching happens for these guys. They've put themselves in a great position heading into the offseason as they continue to try to strive for a championship. So, you know, time will tell on that. But, you know, Yossi, as always, I appreciate your help breaking down all those contract scenarios on what each guy can get heading into the summer, my man.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks for having me on, Michael. Things are starting to heat up I can feel the off season's really right around the corner. I'm excited.
Absolutely. And on behalf of my colleague Yossi, I want to thank everyone for tuning in. If you want to hear more episodes of the Hoops Hype podcast with guest appearances from NBA players, coaches, executives, and media members, you can like and subscribe to it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. You can keep up on my tweets on Twitter at Mike A. Scotto. And make sure you're following Yossi too. He's at Yossi Goslin, YossiGozlan. Until next time, I'm your host, Michael Scotto, wishing you and yours all the best.